Idle Hands podcast, and a very happy Easter to all of our listeners, Terry.
Yes, I mean, Easter is a big thing in most places. I mean, it's not even a holiday. Good Friday in Scotland, I moan about it every year. It's not a holiday, and I was just talking about to one of the partners or girls at work about Easter traditions, and apparently, like in Slovakia, the Easter tradition is to pour water over the woman. So apparently, there is a link to Easter here. It's the washing of Jesus' body. So the men throw cold water over a woman, and right. then beat them with willow sticks.
Interesting.
Willow tree. I guess the willow tree's got some religious impact as well, but so that's what they do on Easter Sunday, apparently. So,
right. So moving swiftly onwards, we'll come back to Easter later on, because there's probably a little Easter egg type thing that you can click on, which will be Terry talking about some Dungeons and Dragons nonsense. But before we get to that, it's an interesting week. In politics, we've had a tale of two arrests, Trump and Peter Murrell both down in the clinky. We've got our main feature this week is an interview regarding what's going on Aberdeen's Union Street. We've got Derek Thompson from a new organization called Our Union Street, which is trying to
revitalize
things, make things better. Yeah. And improve the retail environment there. We've also got a review of Eel's recent gig at the Barrowlands, and there's a new BBC Northern Ireland police drama called Blue Lights, which we will be talking about and comparing, hopefully favourably, to Bloodlands, Terry.
So, certainly better than Bloodlands.
So, actually, do you know what? Before we do any of this, it's almost 25 years since the Good Friday Agreement was signed, and Joe Biden's going to Belfast, apparently.
He is. So I've written down two sentences here. I've written down, Biden goes to Belfast, and underneath I've written down, Bonzo goes to Bitburg. Which was the Ramones track. So, yeah, he's going to Belfast next week to sort of obviously celebrate, bask in some of that glow, I guess he wants. Would that be called greenwashing? Would that be right?
I think it'd probably be taking a huge sort of film crew with them to show all these adoring Northern Ireland people waving flags at him for his next re-election campaign.
He'll have a social media advisor will be with him to make sure he gets a picture with Guinness for sure.
Yeah.
And, supping a pint of Guinness, looking sort of intelligent. And then possibly, and I think this would be a good one for him with a bag of Tato crisps.
As long as they're not the fake Tato ones. So he's going to Louth, Terry. So he'll probably be going down via Newry down that way, I guess, he won't. He'll just get a helicopter, won't he?
Yes, absolutely. He'll be choppering across the border sort of thing on a, what do you call it, Marine One or something they call it. But he must be going to do, I mean, I guess he's going to Stormont, but he's not going to open anything or start anything because they haven't agreed anything yet, have they? So
well, they generally don't announce the stuff until the last minute, do they? It's to make sure that they don't give the heads up to any potential infidels who might have it in for them. But, I mean, it is quite an interesting time in Northern Ireland at the moment. We had two groups of masked men parading around in Newton Ards recently, Terry. Yes. These are apparently rival gangs that have paramilitary backgrounds who are basically drug kingpins in that town at the moment, eh?
Yeah, I was talking to somebody who's from that end of, from Donaghadee, actually. He's not far from Newton Ards, and yeah, it's all a bit messy, I think, over there. And I mean, it's the whole, yeah, I mean, they're all, I mean, was it 2 weeks ago that this kind of papers, a warning of a terror attack imminently sort of thing, and that obviously never happened. They obviously caught it in time sort of thing, but it's all a bit messy. I mean, County Down, North Down especially, I guess, is fairly loyalist leaning, I guess, compared to sort of South Down and sort of Newry area where Biden will be speeding through, I'm sure.
But
it's all a bit messy, and it's all bubbling under the kind of sort of surface sort of thing, so...
Yeah, and actually, I don't know if we should maybe start talking a wee bit about Blue Lights, the BBC police drama, because it does kind of address policing in Northern Ireland and if you like, this light touch approach to the paramilitaries and I suppose, legacy problems associated with trying to keep the peace and basically hands off on organized crime.
Yeah, so well, I do have a bit of insight, not insight, but I had a bit of experience in this back in the day when I was living in Belfast. Myself and my pal used to go and play tennis on the Falls Road with a couple of tennis courts. So we'd drive across and play tennis, and then just you would drive back across for those who know Belfast. The M1 way cuts into Belfast, and we'd drive under that and up to the university area. And one night we were coming back about 10 o'clock, it was dark. And so we came down to the motorway, there was a red light. Guy waving his torch, sort of thing. So I assumed it was the police. As we got closer, it was clear it was the paramilitaries. The guy had a balaclava on, he had a homemade Kalashnikov and a baseball bat or whatever sort of thing. And there was three or four people. And I turned to my pal Morris and I went, "Oh God, this is not going to end well, is it?" Because, I was a Protestant from Northern Ireland. My surname's Charlton, which is very English sounding. So we pulled over and we wound the window down. And the guy shone the light in the back seats and shone the light in the front seats and so on. And he went, "Oh, Morris, how you doing?" And Morris went, "Oh, I can't remember the guy's name, Seamus or something." "Oh, yeah, I'm good, good, good. Busy day, just playing tennis." "All right, on you go," sort of thing. And so we drove on after me absolutely shitting myself. And he said all they were doing was looking for drug dealers and miscreants. They were, and the paramilitaries, were actually keeping the peace beyond what, because the police wouldn't come into the area to do that kind of stuff. And it was almost the unwritten rule that they wouldn't. And the paramilitaries would police that because they weren't. I don't think they were into drug dealing at the time. I don't think they were. They were trying to keep it out. That's
Well,
correct.
I think they were allegedly keeping it out, but they did have a financial interest in it,
I'm sure now it's more. I'm sure now they are for sure. But it was always that way, and so there always was. Certainly in Belfast, where I lived there always was very little trouble that wasn't sectarian related. I mean, there was terrorist stuff, but there wasn't much drugs. There wasn't much, there was certainly nobody checking the cars for drink driving or any of that sort of stuff. So,
So this new drama, Blue Lights. I mean, it's we obviously have to compare it to Bloodlands because Bloodlands is so awful and was out quite recently, but Bloodlands had that kind of legacy, kind of paramilitary side to it in terms of the major theft of money from the Northern Irish Bank. Sorry. And this one, takes a different look at things, in terms of how the paramilitaries have, basically controlled organized crime in Northern Ireland and how the cops react to it. And it's actually quite interesting to watch, not just in terms of, that story and the level of intimidation of the community, but there are also some interesting wee side stories about, older coppers who've been. You remember the good old bad old days
Oh, yeah,
relative
100%.
to, cops in their 20s who have absolutely no idea what went on before in terms of direct experience. So, yeah, quite an interesting program. I will be watching a bit more of it.
No, and I think you'll find a lot of the older, I mean, it's all changed now, but now it's the police service, Northern Ireland. But when it was the RUC, a lot of the coppers, I mean, there wasn't much training going on. They were probably recruited from mates of mates, different things. They were probably taken from, possibly paramilitary organizations on the loyalist side into the RUC. So they arrived with fairly steeped sort of prejudices already intact sort of thing. And I've certainly experienced of that in Omagh, even in Omagh, especially Omagh, and certainly more so in parts of Belfast. But that's interesting. Although I do feel it's a bit ridiculous that they've made a TV show about cops about Belfast with James Nesbitt's not in it.
Yeah, maybe he had a restraint of trade agreement in his Bloodlands contract in case they want to revive that,
But it's interesting that, BBC Northern Ireland seem to have made, I mean, they've made, obviously, they do Line of Duty, and which is a bit more, it's not Belfast set, it's a generic place, but they've filmed it in Belfast. Bloodlands, which was pretty terrible, and then this as well. So they've obviously got a bit of a budget for these sort of things going forward. So
Yeah.
it's
And
good.
we can't get away from cop stories this week. We've had two of the most high profile arrests of all time, and they're both very egregious. We've had Donald Trump arrested in New York City, and this morning Peter Morrell's been picked up by the Rossers.
Yeah, I mean, the Trump thing is amazing. I mean, did you see the bit where they didn't keep the door open for him?
Yeah.
Oh, that just made me laugh when he was walking through, and the guy, I mean, to be honest, the guy should have held the door. I mean, he's an old age pensioner for a start, but the fact that the door was closing, and Trump's like, they were talking about this on the radio this morning, that they reckon in 50 years Donald Trump's never opened the door.
Yeah,
people always do it for him, but he didn't look great today. I mean,
no, and you know, you say he hasn't opened a door in 50 years. He's hardly been out of a courtroom for the last 50 years either, because you know, I think real estate deals in the States can have a dodgy element to them, and you know, his organization are facing multiple lawsuits. Nothing to do with this one. Like this one is small beer. He's in more trouble with the other ones, I think. You know, the suggestion that he's kind of interfered with local state election results from the presidential Georgia. Election, and obviously fomenting, you know, treasonous behavior and the attacks on the White House and the Capitol.
Yeah, it was interesting. I listened this morning. They were talking about how he headed back down to Mar-a-Lago, which was Florida retreat, and did a redress at his own private members club last night, which they said essentially was his greatest hits. He's rolled out the same bits again. There was nothing new. Well, the only thing that was new was Afghanistan, potentially moaning about that, but he didn't have anything new to say. But they thought that, it was the BBC this morning, was saying that the charges against him, the 34 charges, are fairly thin, though, and they couldn't find a smoking gun in them, really.
Yeah.
And it does smack of revenge or some way. And you not think? I don't know.
Yeah. I think it's part of a softening up process, just to, basically try and get Americans to make that connection between him and illegality of one sort or another. And I think you're right. I think that this is, it may be, you know, for want of a better expression, a bit of a trumped up kind of felony that is more like a misdemeanor. And, you know, the Democrats are in a funny position with it, really, because if he is found guilty, you know, before the next presidential election, he can say it's a fix. And if the charges are thrown out or he's found not guilty, then he can say this was an attempt to besmirch my name. So I think what will happen is it'll get kicked into the long grass, and this case won't come to court before the next election.
And apparently, no matter what happens, because he's obviously not going to be going to prison, it doesn't matter if they find him guilty, he can still run for president. There's no precedence to say he can't. So it probably does fuel his supporters. They won't change their minds about him. So just carry on as normal. But like the SNP.
Well, indeed. So on to another man who's out of office, Peter Morrell, who we understand has been arrested this morning. Now, the cops aren't saying very much, but they have erected a nice little marquee in front of the Sturgeon residence, and there's plenty of cop vans knocking about. Apparently they've been swooping for searches at other locations.
Is that in Edinburgh, or where does he live? Where do they live?
I'm not sure. I don't know, but I'm assuming it's probably you know, maybe in her constituency or similar. So there have been a lot of rumors about finances in the SNP and what has happened to money which had been ring-fenced for the independence campaign. We can't really go into much detail on Terry, can we?
I think it's going to run and run. I mean, there's a whole bunch of stories at the weekend about, I heard, who's the guy? Was it Glenn Campbell, the BBC political correspondent, shouting a question that Sturgeon was the story about her having the affair with the French ambassador, True, who's a lady, by the way. And she kind of fapped it off with a fairly hot sort of thing, but there's definitely more stories to come out. So
And those are obviously allegations.
And all the Humsa was up in Aberdeen yesterday. He was out the court. So
And you know, he's going to face some awkward questions now. You know, he's saying that party structure needs to be reformed on that, but I don't think it's going to reflect well on him and his pals.
Really. I did laugh for a second thinking how the Greens were thinking about the coverage of Hamza's visit. He was down at the new port yesterday getting his picture taken in front of a giant drilling offshore oil rig. It's nothing other than an oil rig that will be drilling for oil, I guess. And I thought it was brilliant. I mean, the port has got the new port is for renewables business for sure. They're doing stuff already, but yeah, the fact that he was in front of that just made me laugh. I thought,
no. Yeah, people in the Northeast would appreciate that.
Absolutely,
the irony of it.
Yes, exactly. So,
right, okay, and speaking of the Northeast, Terry, it's hard to not dwell on the state of Union Street when you're either walking or driving through it these days. In retail terms, the street is in a state of decrepitude, I think it'd be fair to say. We've had developments around the city have turned the heads of a lot of the high street retailers, and they've abandoned it. And it's been an ongoing problem. We've got a new organization called Our Union Street, which is, a cooperation between local business, Aberdeen City Council and the Chamber of Commerce and a few others. And we spoke recently to Derek Thompson. He's their representative, and here's our interview with Derek. How do you solve a problem like Union Street? We're joined today by Derek Thompson of Our Union Street, which is a new organisation established to do just that. Derek, you're very welcome.
Thank you very much. Good morning, Michael. Good morning, Terry.
Morning.
Now, Derek, there was a photograph of Aberdeen taken just before Christmas in 1994 that I saw on Twitter recently, and the length of Union Street, as far as you can see, was just stowed out with shoppers. And,
yeah,
you know, when you consider how things look now, how did we get to where we are with 47 retail units lying vacant and unloved on the street?
Great question to start with, Michael. Yeah, how did we get here? Well, I think most people would understand that over the last few years, you know, the rise of shopping, not on the high street, but on the internet instead, has obviously burgeoned to a level where, you know, the people who are buying stuff online have outdone the high street shops. But that's not to say that in the future it's not possible to, you know, reverse that in some way. I think people are still, you know, they still like to touch and feel and see things. And if you get that mix right again, then I don't see any reason why you can't start to change that scene that you paint. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's interesting. So I'm from a very small town, as is Michael, in Northern Ireland. I was home recently. I mean, we're talking to my wife, who's from Glasgow, walked up the street. We got to the end of the street, and she said to me, "Do you notice anything weird in the street?" And I walked up and down the street hundreds of times in my life. And she said, "There's not one empty shop in a small, 40,000 people, every single shop was full." And I thought, I turned around and looked, we walked back and thought, it's absolutely right. It was full of shops, some multinationals, a lot of independents. And I thought, hey, goodness, how can we get this into Aberdeen? This kind of, you know, like Monaghan is the same where Michael's from, a lot of small independent kind of shops. Because like you say, Union Square and all these places are all full of big, people want the big shops. But yeah,
I think that's the thing, Terry. We all have places in the world that we've been or grew up in or whatever, have these, you know, kind of magic little recipes, if you like, of little artisan shops all bunched together. You know, there's no big retailers and they all make a living. And yeah, I mean, we would love to get back to a position where, you know, Union Street is like that. And I think that's one of the focuses that we need to bring to the fore right at the start of this is, you know, how do we get these empty retail units, filled again and looking loved and cared for again? And, you know, whether that's big high street retailers or local people, you know, it would be great to have a mix of both again.
Yeah. And the approach to it heretofore had been perhaps what could be described as a bit scattergun, Derek. But this organisation is a collaboration of Aberdeen Grampian Chamber of Commerce, Aberdeen Inspired, the City Council and Opportunity Northeast. And it does have some funding behind it. I gather there was an emergency meeting between a lot of the stakeholders last year. Can you tell us how the organisation came to being?
Well, Bob is at the kind of forefront of that part of it, and essentially I'm joining him now, you know, on the back of all of that to help get the process and the program up and running. I think Shell are also involved as well, because they've recently moved onto Union Street. So yeah, so you've got a heavyweight bunch of organizations there who are fully behind, you know, this whole re-energizing process, which is great. I think the difference this time around, Michael, is that, you know, it's not been done in this way before. And that's the key to it, you know. And again, Bob and I are not here for any personal financial gain in any of this. All of the time that we give to this will be, you know, from us free of charge. And as I understand it, Bob was asked to lead the process, given his extraordinary background in managing projects of this nature, where, you know, change is at the forefront of it. And how do you get all these bodies together in an effective way that you start with these small baby steps and you start to make big change over, you know, a longer period of time? I think we've all seen in the past, you know, consultations and all these things that take place and focus groups, and, you know, sometimes not with the success that you would want out the other end of them. So we are taking a completely different approach this time in order to really understand what people want to see here. And I think that's the key to it, is listen.
Yeah, because some of the things that have happened, obviously, you know, obviously COVID happened everywhere, but, you know, the back of that end, there was, you know, John Lewis is closed, and, you know, there's, you know, Debenhams, which is absolutely nothing Aberdeen can do to influence that to a degree. You know, these big chains, you know, Debenhams has disappeared from the high street, British Home Stores, but, you know, there's so much going for Aberdeen, I think. And I was, you know, recently the Spectra Festival, which was running over the weekend, and that was an evening thing, but the crowds in the city were unbelievable when you think.
Well, you know, absolutely bang on again, Terry. There's so many things that Aberdeen has had in years gone by, and again, we can't turn back the clock. But what we can do is, you know, is look to the future, and see how many of those things we can realistically bring back to the city. You know, music festivals, as you say, and all the other wonderful things that used to go on. But right now, the focus is on, you know, how do you bring people back into that city centre arena? And, you know, key to that has got to be filling these empty units, you know, as quickly as we possibly can.
Yeah.
And in the short term, you know, what do you do with these shop fronts that are sitting looking, you know, dull and empty and, you know, need some TLC? And again, there's lots of ideas coming through as to what we can do with these shop fronts, you know, in the short term, whilst we're waiting for them to be filled. And again, I don't want to, you know, give anything away today, because we've got about 2,500 ideas that have come in already. We've already got about 600 volunteers who are willing to come forward and help us start to change the shape and face of the street. But we're sifting through those carefully at the moment, looking at how deliverable they are. You know, what is the likelihood of these ideas actually doing something that will make an impact, you know, in the short term? You know, a fascinating thing that got me the other day was when somebody told me the numbers that came to the light festival, you know, in the gardens. Yeah. You know, over 10,000 people, you know, coming to the city centre, you know, for a well-run event. So it just shows you, if you do something, and there's no reason why some of that actually can't happen in some of those shop fronts in the short term.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, Aberdeen, you know, you obviously had Spectre recently, you know, we had, you know, Granite Noir was running recently, which again, you know, brings people, yeah, they tend to be in the evening and not during the day in the shops and stuff, but even the New Art, I worked at New Art the last couple of years, it's been running, and, you know, a fantastic thing, and people will come to the city to see that, and, you know, even stuff like, and I know we've talked and we've moaned about it before, about, you know, the BrewDog AGM and stuff, but I remember bringing 10,000 people to the city back in the heyday, you know, and Aberdeen does have a very big craft beer community and stuff. So there's loads of things you imagine I'm sure you have loads of ideas.
That's what I'm saying. There's loads of ideas that have come through. You know, what, you know, how realistic all of them are at the moment is, you know, we need to look at those very, very carefully. And as I say, bring the ones to the front at the moment that are, you know, that are likely to deliver something quite quickly. And I keep coming back to this point. It's little podcasts like this that, you know, are fantastic because they really kind of seep into parts of the community that we might never hear from. And that's what we want, you know, to do in this is to hear from every strata of the community that has something to say about this or an idea to bring forward. And, you know, every idea at the moment, you know, has a valid place, and we will look at those. And as I say, start to filter the ones that we know we can make work with the army of volunteers that we've got, and working with all the other partners who are, you know, coming at us now to make a difference. And that again is encouraging because, you know, since we started, the amount of people and different organisations who've communicated with us is extraordinary.
Hmm.
Yeah, and the other thing maybe to point out, Derek, is you know, Aberdeen isn't alone in terms of having a problem, you know, with an element of decay of the city centre. I suppose a change in the retail environment. You know, shopping isn't necessarily something that people come into the city centre to do anymore. So, you know, by encouraging people to get involved, you're going to generate these ideas, which are potentially applicable to other cities as well. And, you know, hopefully might feed through to a bit more lateral thinking in terms of policy at, you know, a country level as well as a local level.
Bang on, Michael. You know, and that's it. You know, we are open to not only listen and learn from every other community that's been through the same problem, but again, once we start to, you know, make change ourselves and, you know, have great ideas that can, as you say, can be quite easily applied to other cities, absolutely, more than happy to, you know, get engaged in that. Because at the end of the day, it's about just making our place better. And for as many people, towns, cities, we can do that, then great.
And the other thing that would strike me is, you know, Aberdeen is a city which is undergoing an economic realignment now. You know, there's we're reaching, if you like, the sunset of oil and gas related business, but there are new opportunities on the horizon. And also, I suppose, things which have maybe been neglected over the years, like tourism, for example. I mean, you think of what a fantastic focal point Aberdeen City is for, you know, being a gateway to Royal Deeside or the Whiskey Trail, all these, you know, fantastic things on the doorstep. And because we haven't had the capacity in terms of hotels and the like in you know, the last number of decades, we've got the opportunity to refocus and not just have you know, a retail environment, but also to have a tourist driven part to the city economy as well.
Again, I think you said it all there, Michael, you know, very eloquently, that, you know, there is a great opportunity now for Aberdeen to, you know, to look at itself very closely. And with all the organisations we've got, you know, Inspire One, the Chamber, you know, and the bigger oil companies and renewable organisations as well. Yeah, absolutely. It's now time to go, right, what is it we can really do together here that will land us, you know, in a position that we're, you know, going to grow and shine over the next, you know, 15, 20 years?
It's interesting. I mean, obviously, you look at the city centre, you know, and places that are sort of empty. And I was chatting to you know, Colin Farquharson. He used to work at the Belmont Cinema. So that's obviously sitting idle at the minute. And he's working for a company called Outer Spaces at the minute, who are taking, you know, derelict, empty buildings. He's got the old TACA office in West Hill, and that's been opened up to sort of artist space. And the TACA building's full of photographers. The old Welliford building in Dyce is full of bands rehearsing. And, you know, which is great to see those, but I mean, most unexpected, but great to see those places empty. So there must be something that can help in that, in the city centre, for sure, you'd imagine. And like I say, people have the desire to come in. I think they do want to come in, you know.
Yeah, but again, it comes back to right now where we're at, you know, in our Union Street is, you know, we need those volunteers and people to come forward to help us to start make, as I say, these little baby step changes that will together grow into something special.
So how does that work? So obviously, just thinking about the city, Union Street, physically at the minute, you have Union Terrace Garden, which is, you know, opened up now at the Spectre Festival, and it's looking, you know, starting to look really good, I think. It's a lovely space, and they're filling up those cafes and stuff in there. How would you guys link up with that? I mean, because obviously they can run events. I don't know who would run events there. The council would run that, or is it a...
Well, again, you know, the bigger picture of events is a far bigger discussion. I think, you know, Terry, that obviously, again, we need to engage in with those who run events across the city.
Yeah.
That's not to say that we'll come out with some ideas that we will hand to events people that, you know, may start to, you know, again, pick particular parts of Union Street and you know, hold things there that will energize those little particular areas. But, you know, for us, it right now, it's more about the street itself, you know, and looking at, you know, the bits that are not looking too clever, the weeds that are growing out of Rome pipes, the doorways that are not particularly good. Now, again, therein lies the bigger discussion with, you know, the landlords and the owners of these buildings, you know. And a lot of them have lain empty, A, because they can't get tenants, you know, B, you know, there's the whole issue of discussion of rental rates and all the rest of it, which is, you know, big, big stuff. But at the end of the day, what we can do is start small and start to make the place look a little cleaner and a little tidier, a little more loved. Mm-hmm. And as I say, by starting to do things in the spaces that are empty, bring people in, you know, to look and see and be.
Yeah. I mean, there's one point actually was interesting. I just did a snap poll at my work, and they always moan at me because they always ask what I'm doing at the weekend, and there's always stuff on that I was going to, and most people didn't even know they were on, sort of thing. And I don't think Aberdeen's very good at these events. You know, Spectra and Granite Wire, they're all, and Newark, they're all very well attended, but they could be bigger, I think. And I think sometimes Aberdeen needs to shake the tree a bit louder and get all the stuff out, because it does fantastic things. I mean, I love the weekend of Granite Wire, so but
yeah. Yeah, and, you know, there's so much more we could be doing. But again, all of that right now, it's coming back to all of us and saying, right, what are those things? You know, what are the things people want to see, and how can we, you know, how can we get those facilitated?
So you mentioned you had over 2,000 ideas. I mean, how are you going to sift through those? And what's like, is there a time frame for that to go through and sort of think, well, here's our top. I'm thinking, you know, a top 100 of things you could do really quickly, you know, that's what you kind of want to get to or whatever. But
well, like any filter process, you know, we have to put the team right on it, which we are, and look very closely. But the critical thing this time is we want to look at each one very closely so that, you know, nothing will be thrown away in any of this. It comes back to, you know, what's the likelihood of something happening? You know, that realistically we can do in the short term, because all of the ideas are valid in their own way. Mm-hmm. It's that, you know, resource fully engaged on making sure that, you know, we've filtered them properly. So you can imagine we'll have a lot of little folders that we put things into and prioritize the ones that we know we can do something with. And there'll be a lot more of that, you know, in the coming weeks. Bob will be doing a weekly, at least he's already started, weekly message, you know, on what's happening, what's coming to the fore and what we're up to.
So, Derek, how do people get involved? How do they get in contact with Our Union Street?
Well, onto the website, ourunionstreet.com, and it's all there. And Bob and I are available for anybody to contact us anytime. Okay. And again, all that information is on there as to how to reach out to us. And we promise you, we will give you an answer to any query or question you raise, and a response to any idea that you put forward.
Okay. And a possible question, I realise, but do you have a time frame for kind of like making your first steps, or, you know, by the summer, you think, or is it sort of...
I wouldn't put any time frame on this at the moment. You know, as I say, we're a little over a week in. You know, so it's... Yeah. But all that will become very clear, be very transparent in the coming weeks. And hopefully we will have a space shortly that people can come and visit us as well. because for me, you know, the part of what I'm doing here is actually everything that comes in, I'll be reaching out to those people as quickly as I possibly can to have a conversation, you know, and just let them expand on whatever they've put forward, so that, you know, we properly have asked the question, we've listened and interrogated what's there, so that we, you know, we can formulate the proper way forward from that.
Yeah. I'm not going to ask you this question because I don't think you'd answer it, but I'll mention it. But, and again, interesting discussion with some friends and work colleagues, and they're always surprised at the lack of exposure of the oil companies that are currently based in the Aberdeen area, involved in local culture. They do sponsor some things, I guess, but there's not an awful lot. I mean, BP used to sponsor I'm sure they still do in the art gallery, but, you know, things like that, you know, is reaching out to them part of it, or is that just too big a thing to look at right now?
We are reaching out to everybody, yeah. You know, and that's what I said right at the beginning, is that we've got, you know, such an interesting and eclectic mix of people who've already come forward from all backgrounds,
yeah.
in industry and, you know, and people who are, you know, sitting at home retired now. Yeah. It's, you know, it's quite weird. It's just amazing how many people have come forward already. So it just shows you the level of care,
yeah,
that is actually sitting there under the skin of Aberdeen, that at this moment is untapped.
I tell you, if you could plonk an oil rig in the streets, you'd make a fortune, because the last couple of weekends, I've been going walking around to the rig that's parked in the New Harbour, and the amount of folk that are walking around there, because, and it's bizarre, and Michael may be surprised at this, but my daughter, my son works offshore, but my other son had never seen an oil rig, a drilling rig in person, and loads of people hadn't. They've seen pictures of them. I mean, you've seen pictures of the news and stuff, but they've never physically seen one and how big it is. And you go around there to Torrey, to the New Harbour, and there's people walking down. The Grey Hope Bay place must be making a fortune in coffee, because there's folk walking around the headland. But I mean, that's unbelievable. So, I mean, just stick one down the Crackle Gate and you'll make a fortune.
So are you formally putting that forward as an idea, Terry?
I might do that. You could put a model down at the end of the castle gate there, and you stuff something in the middle of it. So, but you know what? It is the heritage of Aberdeen, the oil and gas. Certainly,
I think, you know, you've said something really interesting there. Is, you know, these are the ideas that we want to hear. You know, it doesn't matter how, you know, high level, low level, mad, bizarre, whatever, you know, adjective you want to, we want to hear all the ideas,
yeah.
You know, so that, as I say, we can filter them all and look at the ones that are really going to do something that puts Union Street going back to that picture you painted right at the beginning, Michael.
Yeah.
You know, somewhere that is active and vibrant. I you know, and I visited, funnily enough, Montreal not that long ago with an old friend of mine who had, you know, a part to play in the redevelopment of the city centre there. And, you know, that in many ways wasn't dissimilar to what Aberdeen was like. And if you go there now, it's just an extraordinary buzz.
Hmm.
And again, there are so many that we would love to hear about that we've not heard about, where that change has taken place, and learn those lessons that will help us get back to a place where, you know, you have that mix of artisan, you know, other high street retail entities, yeah, that give you that blend of stuff with, you know, restaurants and all the rest of it that people want to be, yeah, and spend some,
yeah,
time.
I mean, there are examples closer to home, admittedly probably very well funded, like Liverpool and more recently Dundee. So yep, you're right, it can be done. It often means a reset, but I think there's an appetite for it. And I think I speak for myself and Terry in wishing you the very best with the venture, and look forward to seeing what it yields for you.
Great. And let's reconvene in 12 months' time, guys, and see where we're at.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, thank you very much for your time today, Derek. That's been a great chat.
It's been a great pleasure. And again, I commend you guys and what you're doing here, because getting these messages out into the community is so important. So thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thanks, Derek. Right, Terry, it's nice to see something positive being done about Union Street. Mm-hmm. We'll have to wait and see what the findings are. I gather we might get an update this week.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think between Derek and Bob Keeler, who's kind of the front of the campaign, I mean, it's they're going to do something. They're going to, you know, as he said, look at the fairly sort of simple wins to start with, and even cleaning up the shop fronts or putting something nice in the front shop fronts. Although, funny enough, I saw today, there seems to be quite a few little small restaurant chain ones coming back to Aberdeen. But I mean, I think what they really need is sort of shopping to bring people into town, or some sort of retail outlets or something. But it seems that they've got a plan. It's not going to be a magic fix, I don't think. But, you know, hopefully, as I say, something positive will come out of it. I think it's
coming. Yeah. I mean, I think that they have to focus on, if you like, what assets the city has these days. And I mean, one which we didn't really discuss a huge amount in the interview, but it's strikingly obvious, is tourism, because there's a lot more internal tourism within the UK in recent years. And, you know, Aberdeen's got that royal connection with Royal Deeside. You're close to the Whiskey Trail. There's a lot to enjoy in around Aberdeenshire in terms of history and just natural beauty. So
I thought of like a royal family theme park. With, you know, imagine kind of like a rides where you would sit in corgis going around the rides and stuff and different things, and you could have, you know, throw a cream pie at Charles's face or something. But
no, I'm not Charles's face, surely it'd be Meghan.
Be careful of that. But no, I think you're right. I think Aberdeen tourism is definitely a thing. Just as an aside, I don't know if you've seen the story. So, you know, if you, I can't remember where it is, it's outside, what's the big, the Rijksmuseum in Amsterdam. They've got the big Amsterdam sign, giant letters that people will get their picture taken in front of. It's also an Arsenal outside the Arsenal Stadium. So people, it's quite a good sort of social media thing. They're putting an Aberdeen one in a castle. Yeah. So, although I think from what I've seen, it's not just a simple A to N letters, it's going to be some sort of digital or sort of colored lights or something. So hopefully by putting it on Castlegate, people will come down and get their picture taken. And which I think it will, because people love those kind of things. So,
yeah. And you know, I think realistically, the state of Union Street is probably going to get a bit worse before it gets better. I mean, one thing which is on the horizon is an end to rates relief for a lot of the retailers who are and landlords who are on Union Street. So we may find that the situation gets a bit worse before it gets better. And hopefully it'll spur a bit more action. The fact that, you know, instead of having 57 vacant retail units, so we may end up with a few more than that. And it just highlights how difficult the situation is.
I hope so. I think the likes of Eden Terrace Gardens getting up to speed again and having some events there when the weather's a bit better and will drive people to town, will surely give, you know, some people incentives to come back into city centre. So fingers crossed that that kind of goes ahead. And
Hopefully we can, all these changes will entice people to come out of their dungeons, Terry.
Yes, and speaking of dungeons, I went to see Dungeons and Dragons last week, which is the new kind of fantasy drama with starring Chris Pine from, Chris Pine was from Star Trek, and Michelle Rodriguez from the Fast and Furious series, which I'm sure you're fully aware of, Michael.
Yeah.
So my prime reason for going to see this film was, first of all, it's filmed in Northern Ireland, so it's obviously filmed in some locations that I've been to. And when we were home 18 months ago, we were walking down past the Titanic Studios, and they were filming at night. And about 100 yards away, past a huge sort of security cordon fence and everything, Chris Pine was having his evening dinner. And the reason I know it's Chris Pine was because I shouted, "Hello, Chris." And they turned around and I got a very distant photograph of Chris Pine. So, it's a very typical for those. It's a Dungeons & Dragons, fantasy role playing game, which, you know, started up back in the '70s where people would be writing stories. You know, very, you know, it's imagination driven. It's still massive at the minute. I mean, it's unbelievable. I was doing some research into how much they make and sell of these things. It's still huge. So it kind of ticks all the boxes for that. It's, you know, obviously heavily CGI'd, but they have used a lot of locations. And what's interesting, and I guess it makes sense, is they reused a lot of locations from Game of Thrones, which obviously fantasy-based sort of drama filmed in and around Northern Ireland. So they've used the anyone who watched Game of Thrones, the King's Landing set, which gets destroyed at the end, is the set for the Dungeons & Dragons main sort of castle streets. they film in all locations. It's quite a good story. Chris Pine plays a good kind of wisecracking character. It's got dungeons. It's got dragons, although not as many dragons as I thought there should have been. And it's got a bad guy, who's played by Hugh Grant, which is, he plays a very good bad guy, mildly threatening, but, you know, so it'd be okay for kids. But so I didn't go in expecting to enjoy it that much. I really enjoyed it. And I think I would almost go back and see it again.
So, is this the start of a franchise? Apparently people are getting bored with all these Marvel DC ones, Terry.
I think they are. I think this is a more, this is more traditional, back to, you know, sort of almost Lord of the Rings style storytelling. You know, it's five or six unusual pals who get together and go and do on a quest sort of thing. So I'm no doubt they're going to do a second one, I would imagine. I think they'll be quite successful. But I quite enjoyed it. And it's Easter weekend and Easter holidays, if people want to go see something. There's no blood and guts. Well, people do get killed in it. Lots of, but yeah, good.
Good. Speaking of
witchcraft, which we kind of are.
Yeah.
You went to see the Eels in support of their recent
Extreme
album.
Extreme Witchcraft Tour. Yeah. That's correct. Yeah. And this Eels gig, in fact, the tour had, basically been interrupted by COVID. So it was called Lockdown Hurricane. I think I must have bought the tickets about 3.5 years ago. So they were due to tour last year, and then it was just too difficult. So they're back now, and this tour, it's UK at the moment, it's moving on to Europe. And they're about 6 dates into the tour when I saw them at Barrowlands, supported by The Inspector Clouseau. Have you heard of them, Terry?
No.
Two French guys from Gascony. Well, they claim they're farmers, so it's a bit like the White Stripes. One of them drums very loudly, and the other plays Gibson SG very loudly, and it was absolutely in your face kind of stuff. I mean, Eels, you know, have had garage rock kind of phases in terms of their output, and this was in a similar kind of vein. Eels played for heading for 2 hours, and we had obviously quite a few albums that hadn't toured. I think the Deconstruction, they hadn't played Europe with that album, then Earth to Dora, and now Extreme Witchcraft. So they played initially a batch of about 6 songs either from those albums, or I think there was a cover version thrown in as well, which were more the kind of garagey, kind of high energy kind of take. And then they settled down into probably my favorite kind of Eels stuff, which is more the mid-tempo, slightly reflective stuff. And they played a big chunk of the early albums from Days of the Galaxy and Beautiful Freak and stuff like that. Another couple of covers, and finished the show off with the Chet, who's the guitarist, singing the Argent song God Gave Rock and Roll to You, which was of course covered by
Kiss.
Yeah,
that's a strange song to finish with from them, I would have thought, but
they have a habit of doing covers of what you describe as, I suppose, either '80s kind of rock or yacht rock or a bit of medley kind of stuff. So very entertaining show. He was on good form, and there was one funny exchange where he was basically just went through a little chord progression before introducing a song, and somebody beat him to it and shouted out the name of the song, and he said about that chord progression, that could be one of about 18 songs I've written, you know. So very entertaining night out. They're always well worth going to see. And they will be touring Europe and then back to the States before too long. So, yeah, enjoy that highly. And, I'm starting to run out of pre-COVID gigs now, Terry. Have you got any still?
Well, I just suddenly remembered, actually, as I was just listening to your talk, I do have a ticket bought for Ryan Adams, who's playing in the Glasgow Concert Hall, like it is. But I was a bit disappointed because I thought it was him and his band, and then I think it's just him acoustic. So he did like Carnegie Hall show a few years ago. So it is just that, but he's got, I mean, he just re-released four albums on vinyl, plus he's been doing cover version albums left, right, and center. So I fully anticipate a 5-hour show from him potentially. So that could be quite interesting. But on gigs though, and just as an aside, I know we didn't put this down the agenda, so apologies for this, but I was watching the other night the U2 Zeropa tour.
Yeah.
And I kind of thought, was that the tour that kind of changed tours for a lot of bands? Because it was so big. I mean, I'd forgotten how big the stage was. I don't think I'd ever seen anything like it before. And, you know, people have kind of gone to bigger and bigger, bigger sets. Was that the start of proper stadium rock, you think?
Well, I think maybe what had happened with that tour is that the technology had maybe caught up with the ideas that they had, you know what I mean? So you had these, you know, decent quality large projection screens. You also had satellite connectivity, so they were able to, you know, dial the White House or something like that from the stage and speak to people in other places, you know, and be able to beam that stuff back. I mean, prior to that, it had probably been something that just TV companies would have been able to do.
Yeah, they called in the Glasgow one I saw, they called somebody in Sarajevo at the time, I think. So, and they got them on, I think it was a video, I can't remember now, but it was certainly a show. So I don't remember before that seeing such a, I'm never a big fan of, I mean, I can't remember the show before that outside, but it seemed to change the sort of way people present gigs, I think. You know, so.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely did, and probably for the better. And, you know, when I think back to the first, like, big show that I went to, you know, by an international touring band, I mean, I've seen the Lizzy with you to at Slane, but shortly after that, it was the Stones playing Slane. And the problem with the scale of that gig was that projection technology was useless. It didn't really work during daylight hours. And, there was maybe a crowd of 80 to 100,000 people there. And Ronnie Wood and Jagger and Keith Richards just looked like ants. They were so far away, you know?
Yeah.
So that's been bridged.
Yeah, that's the gig I was thinking about, actually, because it was Stones of Slane Castle. And I took loads of pictures that day, and I found the pictures recently, and I've got 80 pictures of the same picture because you can't see them and there's no screen. No, it was on. It was only because U2 I hadn't realized I'd auto renewed, set my subscription to their website to auto renew, Michael. So they sent me. They do the gift every year. It's actually pretty good. This year it's a CD. Of Actung Baby recorded in different places around the world. Nice packaging. So I ended up going back in to watch some of the videos, and that was where I turned up with the Zeropa. So that was good. That's Zoo Station. So.
Good. So they're gonna reconfigure that Zeropa idea for this Las Vegas residency they're doing. Is that?
I think that's the plan in this weird sphere type venue. So I'm sure they'll push the boat out as well, but. It's just funny. We looked at again, and apologies for hijacking into U2, but we ended up on the 2016 videos of the Sounds of Innocence tour. And you see Bono on the Edge, they've aged in the last 7 years quite a bit. Bono still looks pretty young and sprightly at that tour. And you see him in that Songs of Surrender recently. Yeah, he looks like he's had a tough 7 years. Right? So,
Yeah.
Have me old, but anyway.
Yeah, well, anyway, we will no doubt return to them in due course, and we will return to this podcast before you know it. Right. But till the next time.
See you soon. Thank you.